540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Lawmakers are expected to meet tomorrow to discuss the tentative debt limit agreement reached by President Biden and House Speaker McCarthy over the weekend. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
President Biden sounded optimistic about the two-year deal he brokered with Speaker Kevin McCarthy to lift the debt ceiling by an estimated $4 trillion, extending it until after the 2024 election.
Well, I feel very good about it. I've spoken to a number of the members.
Mr. Biden and Speaker McCarthy spent the weekend trying to secure enough support to guarantee passage by the June 5th deadline to avoid default.
It doesn't get everything everybody wanted, but that's in divided government. That's where we end up.
Shooting near the Beach Broadwalk in Hollywood, Florida. Police have responded to reports of multiple people shot. No word on conditions. The beach was expected to see more visitors than usual with the Memorial Day holiday. Events are held across the country to honor those who died while serving this country. WCBS-TV's Elijah Westbrook in New York.
On this Memorial Day.
It means a lot. It means a whole lot.
Hundreds of veterans like Vinnie Bocchicchio flocked to the USS Intrepid to honor those who lost their lives to protect our nation.
I lost a lot of friends of mine in Vietnam. You got to remember them.
The ceremony began with current service members and veterans speaking about the significance of Memorial Day, followed by the laying of four ceremonial wreaths.
In Davenport, Iowa, eight people are rescued from an apartment building after it partially collapsed last night. Fred Voorhees was in the building.
I heard a great big noise and I opened up the door to my apartment and it was like daylight. It's like it was supposed to be a hallway.
No word on a cause. South Korea strongly warns North Korea not to go ahead with a spy satellite launch, which the North has confirmed it plans to carry out in June. Reporter Alex Jensen in Seoul.
A South Korean foreign ministry spokesperson warned North Korea will be made to pay the price for its illegal satellite launch should it go ahead, and will be forced to endure pain. But a statement from North Korea insists the satellites needed to counter Seoul and Washington's reckless military acts.
Russia launched a rare daytime missile attack on the Ukrainian capital Kyiv. CBS's Deborah Patta in Ukraine.
Explosions across Kyiv sent children screaming in terror as a barrage of Russian missiles were all shot down. For two nights in a row, the menacing sound of air raid sirens followed by swarms of exploding drones, many heading straight for the capital. And nearly all were taken out.
This is CBS News.
Hiring's a lot easier with Indeed. Their powerful platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Watts, your personal injury attorneys dedicated to helping you get the justice you deserve. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Van Nair. Here's what you need to know. Home sales are down in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin Realtors Association says existing home sales in April are down 32.5% compared to last year, largely due to a lack of inventory. And that means it remains a seller's market, with buyers facing plenty of competition and high prices. In order to get back to a more balanced state, Wisconsin would have to add 21,000 listings, more than double the number that are currently for sale. If you're going to be visiting state parks in Wisconsin this weekend, you may want to stop at less popular destinations. The DNR says it's expecting big crowds over the long weekend at Devil's Lake State Park. Alternatives include Mirror Lake, Governor Dodge, Natural Bridge State Park, Pike Lake, and the Great Sauk Trail. I'm Jane Van Nair. This is Civic Media News.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson & Watts, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson & Watts, GTWLawyers.com.
So, I have a question for all you guys out there. Why is it that I see you hauling all kinds of stuff in your trucks? Lumber, ATVs, furniture, and everything is strapped down tight. except you. I mean, come on, fellas. You're just as important as your buddy's blue plaid sofa. Buckle up.
Pickups rock. They also roll. Buckle up in your truck and arrive alive. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation.
A no-holds-barred political conversation. That's Matt Flynn Direct.
Gerrymandering is not democracy, it's commie government. It's fake government. You have somebody that gets 48% of the vote and they get 67% of the seats. That is not democracy, it's fake democracy. It's the appearance of law without the reality or the actuality of law.
Matt Flynn Direct, weekday afternoons from 3 until 4 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
Points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Wanted to focus on this story I saw grab my attention coming out of Florida. This is, again, another one of these interesting moments where a couple years ago, you may remember, and I'm sure most people don't, the year was 2017, five workers were killed in an explosion, and I remember this. The electric company down there, the power company down there, was doing some, what was supposedly considered routine work, wasn't routine. Some weird things were going on. They, big explosion, killed five people, And when you're dealing with these coal fire power plants, you better know what you're doing, because the temperatures and the conditions, horrible. I saw, recently, within the last couple of days, that the company, this Tampa Electric Company, has pled guilty to charges of willfully violating the Occupational Safety and Health Administration's standards on dealing with this and resulting in a death. And what caught me was the severity of the penalty that they got. Now you may go, oh my gosh, this is going to be something, right? They could face, you ready for this? Five people died now, understand. Five people were basically incinerated. They could face up to $500,000 fine. Five families lost their breadwinner. Five families lost their loved one. Five people lost their lives. Up to $500,000 fine could come out of this. Now, this is them admitting, yeah, we did it. Willfully did this. And when you go through the testimony and you go through what the prosecutors are saying, that, yeah, they put these workers in a situation that none of them knew what they were doing. They had no real understanding of what the task in front of them was going to be. This is what the reporting has bared out. They walked into a situation where this molten byproduct, what they call slag, that could reach temperatures of 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit, is present. And evidently the system goes, it falls into water and it causes this kind of a situation where it turns brittle and then they can take it out. And it's well above my pay grade of understanding. It's one of those things where you go 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. I know I get that on my hand. There's not going to be a hand left. So you better know what you're dealing with. And when they sent the workers into this, and again, this is where, some of the reporting came out of this that, well, you know, eh, yeah, go ahead. The prosecutors are saying, you know, a meeting, you know, with all the people going, hey, you know, we should probably understand what the thing ahead of us is. We should probably understand what the danger is, what unique is different about this situation. Maybe have people who are a little bit better trained. Maybe follow the OSHA guidelines. Maybe, because maybe if we had done that, those five people would be alive today. Now, you know, the reason I bring this up is, again, this is what we're told quite frequently in the political world. Job-killing regulations. Hear it all the time. I hear it from my buddies at work, you know, OSHA makes me wear this seatbelt. Yeah. There's a reason for the safety regulations that are put in front of us. There's a reason some of this stuff happens, but it's thrown at us. And the company does this too. You know, these onerous regulations, these job-killing regulations. Well, here is a moment where those regulations, had they been followed, five people would be alive. I say five people would probably be alive today. And the company wouldn't be facing a massive, overburdensome fine of $500,000. Now, does anyone other than me think $500,000 fine for five lives and five destroyed families is ridiculous? Yeah. You know what else isn't happening? The person who said, yeah, go ahead. You know, no responsibility on their part whatsoever. Nobody's going to jail for this. That doesn't happen in America. In fact, what I find interesting and what I do know is that only, and this is one of those really interesting parts, there have only been 115 worker death cases in this country that have been prosecuted under the Occupational Safety and Health Act since 1970. Only 115. These five are not those. So as I've always said, if I ever wanted to kill somebody, I'd just give them a job. Create an unsafe work condition. Oops, happened. And you go, well, Rick, why are you telling us this stuff? Well, I'm saying this because ultimately those regulations, OSHA is there to help protect us working people in the workplace. Create an environment, guardrails to keep people safe. And we should want those. But also, more importantly, those workers should have been empowered to say, you know what, we don't really know what we're getting into. We should take a beat. We should take a breath. We should really get on the same page. We should be empowered to say no. And this is where I come back to my having been being a union member all of my working life. I've been in the trucking industry more than 30 years. I can honestly say I've never driven an unsafe truck down the road, because every time I have found something, a defect of one way or another, a light out, the brakes out of adjustment, whatever, it got fixed. And I want that kind of empowerment for every person, because I see these stories and I go, you know, this is what happens when workers don't have the power to stand up and don't feel confident to stand up and say no. People die. And I remember this explosion. It was tragic and it was horrifying. And I want that for no one. So for me, good, sound, sane regulations and a good, strong union, those are a worker's best defense. Those are a worker's best defense to show up at work and go home at the end of the day in the same condition. For me, that's the way forward. Sane and rational. Also, the vice president and the Surgeon General was at Children's Hospital in Washington, D.C., delivering remarks on the Surgeon General's advisory addressing health worker burnout. Coming out of the pandemic, workers in the health industry clearly being burnt out, especially when you look at the reality that half of us are crazy. Half of us are, oh, it's a hoax. You'll have, oh, well, give me, you know, whatever, you know, gelatin or Clorox or give me a light bulb. These are people who see the real death and the real ramifications of people not getting the vaccine and not following medical advice. These are the folks who have to deal with this every day and then have to deal with the families who lose loved ones because of it and the emotional trauma and the emotional stress that comes with that. Well, they're saying, look, you know, there's a projected shortage of 3 million essential, you know, low-wage workers in the healthcare industry coming. There's a shortage in the next 5 years of 140,000 doctors because people just aren't getting into it. And people are leaving. And there's talk of a nursing shortage because nurses are going, you know what, I got to get out of here. This is where, you know, government's got to start playing some part of this. This is where employers got to start playing some part of this. But the Surgeon General, in her remarks, Dr. Vivica Murthy, she said the nation's health depends on the well-being of our health workforce. Confronting the longstanding drivers of burnout among our health workers must be a national priority. COVID-19 has been a uniquely traumatic experience for the health workforce and their families, pushing them past their breaking point. Now we owe them a debt of gratitude and action. And if we fail to act, we will place our national health at risk. This part of a national emergency, part of creating good, safe workplaces, good, safe mental health spaces for our healthcare workers, and also for part of us, ensuring that we help as well. This is all part of it. Now, you may remember, you know, back in April, April 28th marked the 51st anniversary of the Occupational Health and Safety Act going into law. It was signed by Richard Nixon back on December 29th of 1970, went into law on April 28th. We now view that day as Workers' Memorial Day. Every April 28th is a day we remember those who died on the job because it's a tragedy. It's a horrible tragedy. Out of that act came the Occupational Health and Safety and Health Administration, the enforcement arm, you know, the people who come and do inspections, and also the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, NIOSH. They would be the research and data arm. They're the people who try and figure out how to do things better, help keep you safe that way, but also compile statistics so that we can learn. Now, the good folks at the AFL-CIO, they do their annual report, Death on the Job. And in 2020, they came up with 4,764 of us. Got up, brushed our teeth, combed our hair, ate our breakfast, drove to work, punched in, and did not go home. That was a drop from the previous year where 5,333 people died on the job. You could make the argument that drop was because, well, gee, the country was shut down for a good part of 2020. A lot of construction workers, warehouse workers, a lot of people didn't go to work. That could be part of this. But the fatality rate went from 3.5 per 100,000 down to 3.4 per 1,000 or 100,000. And that's fabulous. Every person who doesn't die on the job this year is a great thing. But we're in this moment where I view every fatality as a failure. And you look at the fact that every day in 2020, 340 workers died every day from hazardous working conditions. We can fix that. An estimated 120,000 workers died from occupational diseases every year. That's stuff you're exposed to. You don't even know what work's killing you. And you know, you've got a right to know what you're exposed to. This is the other part of this. Most people are afraid to ask. And this is where, as you know, I go back to my being a union member all these years. You know, everything that I've been exposed to that I've known of, I've asked for MSDS, a material data safety sheet. So I know what the exposure limits are. I know what the consequences are. I know what limits are. I know what the side effects are. Every person has the right to that. You have it. I have it. We all have the right to that. And we should be demanding that. There are also 3.2 million work-related injuries and illnesses. the biggest one being, the muscular skeleton stuff, pulled muscles, strains, stuff like that. 21% of that. I would argue that number is really low. In fact, the AFL's report says underreporting is rampant. They estimate, while the official number is 3.2, they estimate somewhere between 5.4 million and 8.1 million actual injuries per year. And I would say it's probably even higher than that when you consider all of the people who have been forced into the gig economy type jobs, because none of those are counted because, well, you're your own boss. Good on you. You're on your own, brother. But you look at this and the reality, this is costly to employers. It's costly to workers. It's costly to our system. So why isn't it fixed? Because of people. I go back to that scenario at the beginning. Do you think the company wanted those five people to die? No, the CEO didn't want that to happen. It was some, frontline supervisor in a hurry to get, bottom line done. Got to get this report done. Got to get this back up and running. It's this moment. And this is where empowered workers say, whoop, slow down. Yeah, I know you want to hit your goal or you got a profit motive, but we got a safety motive. And this is where, I used to work for a company that said, there's the 110-100 rule. You do something right the first time, it costs $1. You do it right, you fix it the first opportunity, it costs $10. If you don't fix it the first time, you got to do it again, it costs $100, and so on down the line. This is one of those things. Or if you don't do it right the first time, it's going to cost you a little bit more. If you don't do it right the second time, it's going to cost you more. Down the line until you've got workers who are dead. And then it costs not just in dollars, but in lives. And this is kind of one of those moments where, as a country, as a workforce, we should be demanding things are done right the first time. That's why our friends over at the National Council for Economic Safety and Health, the National COSH people, every year come out with their Dirty Dozen. And back for Workers' Memorial Day, back in April, that's what they did. They pointed out, Amazon in Bessemer had workers who died on the job. Also, there were the six workers who died in the warehouse that collapsed. They looked at, the big Dollar General chain where they had workers literally stabbed and shot and beaten and pistol whipped and not protecting their workers on the job, because that's a big part of this. This is where you go and you go, this is where employers have responsibilities to their employees. And we need to be holding them accountable, because these kind of injuries, these kind of scenarios are life-changing for families. And when we come back, I'm going to share a little thought on some of my personal experiences. If you've got thoughts, you've got questions, comments, I'd love to hear them. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you've got injury stories, I want to hear it. Make sure you send me an email, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Remember, if you miss any portion of our program, download the podcast at thericksmithshow.com or wherever you get your podcasts, from iTunes to iHeart, Stitcher to Podbean, everywhere in between. Right back after this.
Labor unions built the middle class, and the middle class built America. That's the message from Teamsters Local 1932, a strong and successful labor union based in San Bernardino that represents over 14,000 hardworking people across the Inland Empire. The Teamsters are ready to help you organize for better pay, increased benefits, and improved working conditions. Reach out to Teamsters 1932 at teamsters1932.org/organize to speak with an organizer today.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Now, according to the AFL-CIO's death on the job report, the industries with the highest death rates, the worst one, agriculture, forestry, fishing and hunting, with 21.5 per 100,000 workers killed on the job in 2020. That pretty much holds steady across almost every year that they've done this, and they've done it for, I think, more than 30 years. Transportation and warehousing is the next one with 13.4 per 100,000, which, and this is the one that I focus on because I've spent a good portion of my life in the transportation and warehousing industry. And I know our friends in the Inland Empire, a huge, huge transportation hub for the West Coast, and warehousing, just enormous. This is one of those areas that I find really, really important to point out, that these jobs can be safe. And I look at the fact that New York has just filed a discrimination complaint against Amazon on behalf of pregnant workers and disabled workers, because there is, you know, the law of the land is that you have to make reasonable accommodations. What Amazon was just doing to these pregnant women is going, well, sorry, you can't, what? You can't lift all those heavy boxes off onto your own. And no pay, because in this country, we don't have paid maternity leave, which is disgraceful on so many levels. But, you know, the fact that you have an employer who's putting someone in that kind of position. And again, if you're off for a certain period of time, you end up then losing your health care benefits at some point. And, you know, it's a snowball of bad. And these employers know this. And they know that, you know, if they make a precedent, if they make an example of one person, that nobody else is going to do it, that no one's going to complain and everyone's just going to fall in the line. And this is where, again, I come back to being a union member. I've never not complained when it was necessary. And this is where having that empowerment of coming together and standing shoulder to shoulder in solidarity, so very important to hold these kind of employers accountable. And in the next half hour, we're going to talk about, you know, Amazon in a different way, because Amazon has a special place in the warehousing industry. They are the least safe of all of them. They're number one when it comes to injuries, which is pretty impressive when you consider that transportation and warehousing is an unsafe industry. To be the leader in that pretty much says something. But, you know, I think back to my situation. You know, I had an on-the-job injury years ago. And it was nobody's, it wasn't the employer's fault. It wasn't my fault. It was, you know, somebody zip-tied a step on the truck instead of welding it. And when I got out of the truck, the zip tie, you know, let loose, and I ended up destroying my hip. And, you know, like a lot of workers, these kind of injuries are life-changing. And for years, you know, you don't do certain things. You make accommodations to do other things. And life's changed. Now, you know, when this happened years ago, they were saying, you got to get this replaced, because it's... And me being stubborn as I am, going, no, I'm not going to get it replaced. Took me about a decade before I ended up getting it replaced. And the doctor was even surprised, because I went back to the same doctor. And he's like, yeah, you, this is a decade ago. I go, yep, I'm stubborn. And as my wife says, you know, that's an understatement. But I think back to those years, and how it completely changed my interaction with my kids, the interaction of you know, just life. And you want that for no one. And this is why I'm such a believer in ensuring that everybody gets to go home in the same condition they went to work in. Why I'm such a firm believer in those people saving regulations. I know my friends on the right love to scream and holler about how onerous regulations are and they're job killers, when the reality is much the opposite. Regulations are actually a bit of a job creator. And if we had more regulators, if we had more people on the job ensuring that things got done right, you know, I don't think we'd have as many injuries. In fact, there are only something like 1,700 inspectors in the entire country for safety. We're at the lowest level in the history of OSHA. It would take something like, the statistic I saw was like 140 years to inspect every single workplace in this country. There's something wrong with that. And that tells me that the pendulum has swung. It has swung to the side of employers and away from enforcement, which is why now more than ever, empowered, educated, active, engaged workforce is so very important. That means you. That means me standing up, knowing our rights, demanding our rights, and having what I would argue, having a powerful union to stand with us. That, to me, is the way forward. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. That was the day the Lucas County Sheriff ordered an attack on thousands of electric auto light strikers and unemployed league supporters, touching off the six-day Battle of Toledo. The Toledo Auto Light Strike was one of three historic strikes of 1934 that turned the tide favorably toward industrial organizing. The Auto Light Company had granted a wage increase, but reneged on promises of a first contract that included seniority rights, a closed shop, and more. Workers walked off the job in mid-April. As the strike was about to collapse, unemployed league forces, organized by A.G. Mustey's American Workers Party, joined picket lines in support. When legal wrangling failed to subdue the strike, scabs and deputized specials were amassed. And on this day, the picket lines grew to as many as 10,000. Deputies began arresting strike leaders and attacking picketers with fire hoses, tear, and vomit gas. Historian Brian Palmer describes the scene this way. Angry workers laid siege to the factory. 1,500 strike breakers were imprisoned. The scene was one of almost medieval tumult. Windows were smashed with stones and bricks, many of them launched from giant slingshots improvised from rubber inner tubes. When every window in the factory had been smashed, one striker shouted, "Now you have your open shop." The next day, 900 Ohio National Guardsmen arrived on the scene. Women jeered the landing of the Marines, while soapboxers, many of them veterans, sporting First World War medals, offered impromptu lectures on how the troops were breaking the strike. The strikers' ranks faced a hail of guardsmen bullets, which left two dead and scores wounded. The battle raged on until the end of May, when it was clear a general strike was imminent.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Can antibiotic medicines, long hailed as miracle drugs, be too much of a good thing? Yes. Two factors are at work here. First, bacteria, one of the earliest forms of life on Earth, are miracles in their own right, with a stunning ability to outsmart the antibiotic drugs through rapid evolution. Second, is the rather dull inclination of us supposedly superior humans to overuse and misuse antibiotic medicines. Every time we take an antibiotic to kill some bad bacteria that is infecting our bodies, a few of the infectious germs are naturally resistant to the drug. So they survive, multiply, and become a colony of superbugs that antibiotics can't touch. Multiply this colony by the jillions of doses prescribed for everything from deadly staph infections to the common cold, and we get the, quote, antibiotic paradox. The more we use them, the less effective they become, for they're creating a spreading epidemic of immune superbugs. A big cause of this is the push by drug companies to get patients and doctors to reach for antibiotics as a cure-all. For example, millions of doses a year are prescribed for children and adults who have common colds, flu, sore throats, etc. Nearly all of these infections are caused by viruses, which cannot be cured with antibiotics. Taking an antibiotic for a cold is as useless as taking a heart drug for heartburn. The antibiotics will do nothing for your cold, but it will help establish drug-resistant superbugs in your body. That's not a smart trade-off. This is Jim Hightower saying, in fact, it's incomprehensibly stupid. Antibiotics are invaluable medicines we need for serious, life-threatening illnesses, but squandering them on sore throats has already brought us to the brink of superbugs that are resistant to everything. That's the nightmare of all nightmares.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I said, you know, warehousing and transportation were the second most dangerous occupations in the country behind, you know, forestry and agriculture. And, you know, as I said, you know, while you go, hey, you know, transportation, warehousing, those are dangerous jobs. Amazon has found themselves. Now, remember, these are the people who said that they were going to revolutionize the industry and they were going to be, you know, the safest of the safe. Just last year, they were going to be the safest warehouses in the world. Well, they have outdone themselves. They have gone well beyond the industry standard. They are, well, they're the industry standard when it comes to being the most dangerous workplaces. And the stories that I've heard, again, these aren't people to them. These are machines. These are numbers. They don't view their workers as partners like we hear. They don't view them as even people. It's all about numbers. And the stories I hear, if you're not touching something every couple of seconds, the machine's barking at you. And if you stop for 5 minutes to take a breath, the machine has the right to fire you. These kind of horror stories that you hear and you go, is that right? I don't know. There's something seriously wrong. And here to share some thoughts on what goes on there at Amazon and to talk about their most recent report, The Injury Machine, how Amazon's production system hurts workers. I've asked Eric Froman to come talk with us. Eric is the health and safety director at the Strategic Organizing Center. If you want to check out their website, thesoc.org is their website. Eric, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. It's good to be here, and especially talking to people in the Inland Empire, which is kind of the epicenter of the logistics industry's attack on living standards and working standards in the whole country.
So am I getting this right? You know, do I have this right? I mean, you know, look, transportation, warehousing have always been dangerous jobs. I've spent my entire life working in that industry, and I've seen people, you know, injured, you know, some very seriously. I've had friends who have died on the job. So it's part of kind of the industry that you expect. Am I right in saying that Amazon has taken this to another worse level?
Yeah, they've done a number of things differently from the rest of the industries we know, but when it comes to injuring their own workers, they are far worse, and they're continuing to get worse, which is even more worrisome. So, in 2021, Amazon accounted for about a third of all warehouse workers in the country and about half of all injuries. How's that for complicated math? Really terrible performance. And this is such a profitable company. You know that if they wanted to slow things down a bit on the lines that they themselves design, that they put robots in to force people to work faster and faster, they could afford to do it with no problem. But instead, you know, they make it very clear to their workers, to everybody else, keep working as fast as you possibly can, and if you can't keep up, out the door. So that's how we end up with these sky-high injury rates, where the injury rate for serious injuries for their workers are double what they are for the rest of the warehouse industry in this country. And this is a new phenomenon. It wasn't like this, you know, 6-7 years ago when they were getting started, but yeah, they have driven this technology to the max.
Yeah, I mean, it's this, you know, I remember back in the old days, somebody would stand there with a stopwatch and they would take, you know, time.
Exactly.
They have taken that to a science, from what I understand. I mean, they've taken every movement, every step, every action, blink of an eye almost. In fact, for drivers, it is blink of the eye technology that they're actually every step, every movement, everything that they're actually, you know, mandating the worker, you know, structure. And it's this kind of pressure that I think is causing a lot of this as well. Or am I off base?
No, you're absolutely right. You know, Dan Rather used to be a famous newscaster in this country. One night, I don't know, 20 years ago, when they were still learning how to use computers, they made the wrong projection on some election race. And he came back on in like 10 minutes, said, oh, no, you know, we were wrong. To make a mistake is human, but to really foul up, you need a computer. Well, they have used computers in such a way as to design robots, design production systems that really have no margin for human performance, no margin for people's bodies, no margin for people to take a breath. And you can't do that with stopwatches and engineers. You can only do that with a computer that's keeping tabs on every single movement that these workers take, or literally hundreds of thousands of them at the same time. So they have the ability to do this. You couldn't do it with human supervisors trying to keep tabs on everybody, but they've designed computer systems and HR systems to be that oppressive, that brutal. It's like they're standing there with a whip, a computerized whip over these workers, 10 hours a day, six shifts a week, round the clock, 24/7. These places operate, and they just push people beyond the capacity of their bodies.
Yeah. Now, am I right in the stories that I've heard that, you know, they have these units that they have that if you're not touching a box every, you know, several seconds, and we're not talking minutes, every several seconds, that it's beeping at you saying, hey, you know, we're noticing you're not doing something. And if there's a gap of a couple minutes, that you can actually just be fired over the little handheld device. Is that accurate?
That's what workers have reported over and over again. Exactly how they find out that they're fired is, you know, varies. It may be that it shows up on this device they're wearing on their arm. It may be they get a text message from a computer in Costa Rica. You know, there's different ways it happens. I think most of the time they don't hear from a supervisor. A lot of workers say they have no idea who the supervisor is. There are process assistants, sort of lead workers, where they go to if they have trouble just, you know, figuring out what's the, you know, where the equipment is or if something's wrong. But actual supervisors, warm-blooded supervisors in a white shirt coming out of the office, ready to talk to someone and solve a problem, forget it. You can't even find them in an Amazon warehouse. So it's all operated automatically. And that's the reason that the California state legislature last year told Amazon in no uncertain terms, you cannot keep firing people without at least at a minimum telling them how much they're supposed to do. You can't keep it a mystery. So that bill, AB 701, passed with strong support in the legislature. The governor signed it, took effect in January. And anybody working for Amazon, you know, within hearing this radio station in Southern California should know about their rights, know about the AB 701, know about the work of the Warehouse Workers Resource Center there in Ontario, because they can help you understand how you can stop the company from firing you without even telling you how much production you should be making.
Yeah.
And for people who they do fire, you know, how you can fight back, how you have rights under the law to get your job back if the company doesn't respect, at a minimum, the law's mandate to tell you, well, here's what we expect of you today.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Eric Furman. He's the Health and Safety Director with the Strategic Organizing Center. If you want to check out their website, thesoc.org, there you can find their most recent report, The Injury Machine, How Amazon's Production System Hurts Workers. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. You know, ultimately, though, Eric, you know, isn't this one of these moments? And I've been saying this for years, and I know you have as well. You know, this scenario is why you need a union. This scenario is why workers should have the right to collectively bargain and have a voice in the conditions under which they work, and why I'm such a big proponent of what, you know, Chris Smalls and the Amazon Labor Union have done in New York, and what hopefully they'll be able to do and other unions will be able to do across this country. Ultimately, that's my view.
Look, if workers don't have the power to stand up for themselves, to organize together, they're at the mercy of the boss, period. We've known this for, well, centuries, certainly since the advent of the Industrial Revolution. And it's a lesson that workers in this country are still learning. You know, a lot of people grow up in this country, they've never had any experience seeing a union organized workplace. And that's starting to change. Starbucks workers, I think we're up to 80 locations or something, where they voted for a union. Certainly the successful election that Chris Smalls and the ALU ran in Staten Island was a major step forward. We workers in America need to pay attention to this really important opportunity to get together, work together, push back against these kinds of abuses by the boss. And, you know, we don't have many rights under the law, but we still sort of have that one. And let's grab it while we can. You know, the famous abolitionist free slave, Frederick Douglass, said, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. And if there was ever a power that demonstrates that, it's Jeff Bezos and the idiots at Amazon.
Well, ultimately, isn't this where, you know, the law doesn't necessarily have to be on your side as long as people stand together? I mean, ultimately, what we're talking about, you know, you go back to the, you know, the sit-down strikes of the 30s. The law wasn't on their side then, but they demanded it. You know, I look at the National Labor Relations Act as a peace treaty between the workers and the companies, because the workers were having no more of it.
Look, if we people rely on the law to make their day, to protect them fully, it ain't going to happen. Whether it's the safety law, whether it's the law to respect the right to organize a union, people have to make a union. They have to fight for safety. They have to stand together and push back against these bosses. And if along the way, you know, an inspector will come in from Cal OSHA and say the company's violating this standard, or the government agents who run union elections will come in and run an election, great. But once workers understand they have the power to shut down a warehouse, to slow down that production, to make hell of the daily life of a manager who treats them this way, the sooner they'll be able to exercise their power, get the relief they need, get the wages they deserve, get the benefits they deserve, and protect the generations come after them. And, you know, for everybody else, if workers at Amazon don't win this fight, this model of business is coming to every place else. You think UPS or FedEx or these other warehouse companies in the Inland Empire are unaware of exactly how much money Amazon squeezes out of its workers? No. You know, Walmart's no breeze. They've got huge warehouses in the Inland Empire. They're going to go this route unless we put a stop to it at Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, Eric, isn't the question we should be asking ourselves, what kind of an economy do we want to have? What kind of jobs do we want to have? Not just today, but for the future. I mean, look, you know, when I was 20, maybe you could have kept up the Amazon pace. Maybe when you were 30, you might be able to barely keep up. But when you get to be 40, 50, when you're getting up into there's no way you're going to keep up with this. So this kind of idea that we can use up and dispose of people, which is seems to be the Amazon model. People only stay a short period of time. I think what came out of the Bessemer organizing drive was Amazon has a yearly 150% turnover rate. That means everybody plus 50% more come and go within a year. That's mind blowing.
It is incredible that a company has grown to this size, treating this many people this badly. But you know, it may be that its time has come. And if we see more workers in the Inland Empire, in Northern California, Nevada, throughout the country, standing up and saying, okay, times are going to change. We want some justice on the job. You know, we may actually see Amazon having to bend. But it's not going to happen without a demand. It's not going to happen because someone else somewhere else does it. It's going to happen because Amazon workers throughout the country decide to stand up. Yeah. And when they do, you know, it's possible to get a company to behave differently. You know, I'm sure there were many companies who were union contractors today, who have signed union contracts today, who never in a million years thought that they were going to treat people with dignity and respect, but workers stood up for it. You know, there was a time when UPS workers were told, you have to carry a package no matter how heavy it is. And about 20 years ago, they went on strike, and all of a sudden, there's weight limits on packages. You wonder why you go to an airport today and the weight limit on your suitcase is 50 pounds? Because the airlines like it? No. It's because airline workers said, we're not going to put up with lifting suitcases that weigh 70, 80, 90 pounds. So these fights happen because people make them happen, and the Amazon workers are making it happen. The Starbucks workers are making it happen. People in lots of industries can make it happen.
There you go. Let's talk real quick about your organization, the Strategic Organizing Center. What do you guys do, and how can you help?
Well, we work on the campaigns that our affiliated labor unions, SEIU, CWA, others have supported over the years. Our focus is on union organizing first and foremost, more than the next round of contract negotiations or politics. Which is a good and a really important thing for unions to focus on, but we focus on getting workers who are not in unions into unions. So the Fight for 15 is a campaign, fast food workers like the Starbucks workers that we've tried to support. Today, workers at a call center supporting operating the Medicare system are on strike in Mississippi, of all places. When was the last time a workplace with thousands of workers saw hundreds of them go on strike in Mississippi? But we've done this. We've supported union campaigns at the Nissan factory in Mississippi and all around the country, where the unions who want to step up their organizing program decide to do that. We're there to support them. And this is what, you know, workers and unions need to be focusing on in America. We're down to under 6% of workers in the private sector in this country are in unions. Clearly, it's more than that for public sector workers, especially in states like California and New York and some others. But nationally, including public sector workers, it's only 10%, but it's even worse in the private sector. That has to change, or we're on a really dangerous path in this country where the rich just get richer and more powerful, and everybody else gets the shaft.
And working conditions get worse and worse and less safe. The website, thesoc.org, if you want to check out Eric's group, the Strategic Organizing Center. We'll get links out on social media. Also, you can check out the Injury Machine Report, how Amazon's production system hurts workers. Eric Furman, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Keep up the great work.
Thanks a lot, Rick. And thanks to everybody in the IE who gets up every day to support their families and then puts up a fight for justice on the job.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, Eric. Eric is the, like I said, the Health and Safety Director at the Strategic Organizing Center. Check out the website, thesoc.org. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Rick Smith here, host of The Rick Smith Show. You know, Father's Day is just around the corner. And if your dad is as hard to find a gift for as my wife and kids claim that I am, here's a little gift-giving wisdom from our friends at Omaha Steaks. Dads want steaks. It's true. We do. Every holiday in my house, it's the same thing. Dad, what do you want for this holiday? And, you know, I always give the same thing. You know, give me a hug and spend a little time with me. I don't need ties or cologne or any of that stuff. And now, thanks to Omaha Steaks, they ask, you know, Dad, what do you want?
Steaks.
Give me the Dad's Want Steaks package. Just go to omahasteaks.com, type Rick Smith in the search bar, and order the Dad's Want Steaks package. And for just $99, this limited time package includes 16 mouth-watering entrees that I love, and I guarantee he'll love too. The smoky, tender, bacon-wrapped filet mignons. The gourmet jumbo Franks, their air-chilled boneless chicken breast, and of course my favorite, the thick, delicious boneless pork chops. And to finish it off, the sweet finish of it all, the delicious caramel apple tartlets. And as a special gift for my listeners, when you type Rick Smith in the search bar and order the Dad's Want Steaks package, you'll also get 8 free Omaha Steaks burgers. These are awesome. You throw them on the grill, cook them to perfection. These burgers are full of bold, beefy flavor, made from 100% Omaha steaks. And now they're bigger than ever, a whopping 6 ounces. So this Father's Day, don't wait. Send Dad more than just a gift. Send him an experience he'll love and can share with you. In fact, don't just order one. Get 2 Dad's Want Steaks packages. One for him and one he can share with you. Just go to omahasteaks.com and type Rick Smith in the search bar and get the Dad's Want Steaks package. You won't regret it. I guarantee it.
Are you underpaid and overworked? Is a living wage and employee benefits like affordable health care more of a dream than a reality for you and your family? If so, it's time to form a union. Don't be denied the wages and benefits you deserve. Come together in a union with the power of numbers. A union is not a privilege, it's your right, and it will make a difference. Contact Teamsters Local 1932, a powerful and successful labor union in San Bernardino, by visiting teamsters1932.org/organize to start today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I want to get to a couple of quick emails. again, you know, thanks, Ron from Riverside, California, listening on KCAA. I said, Rick, I heard your interview with Dr. Michael Belzer discussing the trucking industry, and I have led a similar life as the two of you, watching a once proud, solidly middle-class industry turn into what it is today. Back in the day, truckers were stewards of the road, he says. In the middle of the night, if someone was in need, they were always willing to lend a hand to a stranded motorist. With everyone in such a big hurry and racing against the clock, it's not just sweatshop on wheels, but a cutthroat sweatshop. It's getting worse, and I can't wait until I retire in 3 years. I feel for the next generation. If there is a next generation. Round, I feel fairly confident that there's going to be. I believe there will be. I think they're going to. I'm hoping folks will band together. And like I said in the last segment, you know, the hope is that we start talking about what kind of an economy, what kind of jobs we want to have, and people start standing together. The economic stuff is where we can agree, where the working class can come together. If we can put the other divisions aside for a bit and come together on, you know, on this, on the kitchen table economic stuff, maybe there is a hope. Maybe. Miguel from Fontana, California asks, Rick, just found your show. Love the fact that you're talking about working people. My question is, the trucking industry is a source of employment for so many. What happens, what they automate, and all the drivers out of work? My son is learning right now to be a truck driver. What future does he have? The industry is desperate in this moment, but I fear the big companies use the pandemic as an excuse to push automation. What are your thoughts? I don't disagree. They're going to try as hard as they can and as fast as they can to automate. I've said for a while that in the next 10 to 15 years, all of the long haul jobs could be in jeopardy. You look at, you know, where I live in Pennsylvania, you could easily put a set of doubles or a truck on the Pennsylvania Turnpike and run it right through Ohio on the Turnpike, right through Indiana on the Turnpike, right into Chicago, where you'd have someone meeting on each end. It would never have to stop. That could be a first leg. And look, they're already running out west in Nevada and Arizona. We already know that that's going on. They're doing a lot of testing and a lot of trials, and have been for several years. The reality is, this is where we have to be pushing our legislature to put strict guidelines in place for where and when they're used, because it's going to happen. And this is where we can't be afraid of technology. We've got to control technology, and we've got to have a system and an economy that when people do lose their jobs, and they will, that they're going to be taken care of. We've got to learn the lessons of every step forward technologically and make sure that those people who are going to be harmed by it are made whole. Not just, oh, we're going to give you a little trade adjustment assistance, or here's a little bit of extra unemployment. Maybe we'll get you a certificate at the community college. No. This has got to be made. You got to be made whole. There's got to be a cost to this technological advancement that is going to consolidate even more profits into the hands of the already wealthy. The technological gains of the future have got to be widespread. We cannot continue to allow these advancements to be hoarded at the top. And this is kind of where my mindset has been for a very long time. We have got to make sure that this is something that we fight for, something that we make sure that we demand of our legislature. Congress has got to be involved in this. And sadly, they're so far behind. This isn't on anyone's radar in Congress right now, it seems. There are no politicians talking about this. And this could affect millions of people. That's how dangerous this is. That's how bad this is. This could be really hurtful to a lot of families. Like yours, Miguel, and I wish your son the best. For right now, you're right. You know, companies are a little desperate. So the incentives are there now. I fear that once the incentives start to go away, as things start to slow down, that, well, they claw all that back, which is why, as a union guy, get it in writing. Get that contract. Put it in writing. That simple. At least that's my view. I'd love to hear yours. You can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Appreciate all the emails that folks have sent. Also, if you miss any of our program, the podcast is where you can pick up and catch up. TheRickSmithShow.com is where you get that, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.